Well, Jim and I celebrated our 36th wedding anniversary on Tuesday. Thank you very much. It's been easy for me and maybe not so easy for Jim. Well, he bought me this watch as a gift. Are you surprised that it's orange? But he asked me before he bought it if I wanted a watch that had a second hand on it. Well, yes, I do. I don't know why, but I like a watch with a second hand. Because I think it's because it has an interesting syncopated motion. Now, if I didn't do anything else besides sit there and watch the second hand on my watch tick by, pretty soon, days, hours, years would drift past without my notice. One day I would wake up and go, "Where did all the time go?" James has some words for us this morning that are a little bit unsettling about the passage of time. James 4, 13 through 17. "Now listen, you who say, 'Today or tomorrow, we will go to this or that city, spend a year there, carry on business and make money.' Why, you don't even know what will happen tomorrow. What is your life? You are a mist that appears for a little while, then vanishes. Instead, you ought to say, 'If it is the Lord's will, we will live and do this or that.' As it is, you boast in your arrogant schemes. All such boasting is evil. If anyone then knows the good they ought to do and doesn't do it, it is sin for them. You put water in the tea kettle and wait for it to whistle to let you know that the water is boiling. The steam rises and floats, then disappears in the air. James says, 'That's you. That's me.' Vicky's passing on Wednesday brings the brevity of life home to us afresh. We don't know how long or short our lives are going to be. Time is no respecter of persons. Time did not care that Cosby Show actor Malcolm Jamal Warner was only 54 years old and had a little girl. It did not care that Chuck Maggioni could play the trumpet like nobody's business. It did not care that Anne Burrell could outcook Betty Crocker. It did not care that Gene Hackman really could act his way out of a box. Time marches on to its own beat, and there is nothing we can do to stop it. If you know me at all, you know that I tend to be negative. I am a classic, the glass is half full kind of gal. If you need a negative scenario, call me, I'm your girl. When Jim and I were negotiating getting married, yes, I said negotiating, but ain't nobody got time for that rabbit trail. The reason we were in negotiation was I was trying to give Jim a backdoor out if he wanted one, because frankly, I can be a lot. Anyway, while in the middle of premarital negotiations, I informed Jim that I wasn't going to live past my 40th birthday anyway. I told us that us getting married for him was going to be a crapshoot. But if he wanted to take the chance anyway, we could still do it. As you can see, I lived past 40. I don't know whether or not Jim was happy when I jumped out of bed peppier than a kangaroo on my 40th birthday, but we may never know. James says, we're not supposed to assume how long or short our lives will be. I was really wrong about how long my life would be. The only thing that we can be sure of in the big scheme of things is that our existence is short and uncertain. The scriptures not only tell us that our lives are like a vapor, but they are like a shadow, a grass that withers. God is not really happy with us when we assume that we have all the time in the world and we can do whatever we please whenever we want. God has not given us the power or the insight to know what is in our futures, and I think we ought to get on our hands and knees and thank God that we do not know what the future holds. You do not know what your life will be like tomorrow. Today's sermon may be the last I ever preach. Chris Tomlin may have written his last worship song, and I hope not. J.K. Rowling may have written her last novel. Yet we all live footloose and fancy free, as though our lives will never end. James says, instead of boasting, we're going to do this and we're going to do that, we should say, if it is God's will, we will live. We will live. That's it. The ancient rabbis told this story. A man was invited to supper at a friend's house, and he said confidently, I will most certainly come. But as he left his house to go to the supper, a tile fell from his house, dropped on his head, and killed him. Proverbs 7:21 says, "Do not boast about tomorrow, for you do not know what a day may bring forth." Boasting is a way that we infer that we can live independently from God. James says that all of this boasting is ignorant and sinful. When Napoleon cockily told his friend that he made plans to invade Russia, the friend tried to talk a little sense into him, and he warned him, "Man proposes, but God disposes." Napoleon replied, "I dispose as well as propose." This very act was the turning point in Napoleon's downfall. Napoleon's attitude is the one that James is referring to, the one that thinks that we can manage our time outside of God. James isn't saying that we shouldn't make any plans. It's not wrong to make plans for college or plan for a family or plan for a wedding like the Rumreys have just done. James is warning us against an arrogant attitude that suggests that we can chart our own destinies. We can make our own decisions independent from God. We pull out our calendars and make a list of everything we will do in that week, who we're going to call, where we're going to go. We plan our days as if we are ultimately in control. We make plans for tomorrow as if we know we will be there for tomorrow. We shut the calendar and feel pretty smug about what we're going to accomplish. But we left one thing off the list: God. Planning that leaves God out is cocky. James has encouraged us as we think of our lives to know that every breath we have comes from God. Each day is a gift from Him. If then we don't know if we even have tomorrow or the next day, what should we include in our philosophy of living? Several years ago, Diane Sanford said something that made the wheels of my brain go round and round. Diane said that we should be present in each moment. And there it is. There's our philosophy for living. We should be present. We should consciously live each day to the fullest. There is a big difference between being present and not being present. Sometimes I'm not really present, even when I'm in the room with others. I admit that I spend many hours not truly being present, especially when I'm working on my sermons. Vivi and Jim can be talking to me and I have no idea what they're saying. Well, Zetham says that's because I have the attention span of a chipmunk, but it's really because I'm not present. Lights on, nobody's home. Most of us have had days that we just rush through, and then when we look back at the end of the day, we can't really remember what we did. There are times that I drive back and forth to church and I hardly remember doing it. I'm barely there. I'm too busy thinking about what I'm going to do tomorrow, next week, or next year. When I do this, it robs me of today and the good that I am supposed to be doing today. It robs others of my attention, and my attention tells people that I truly care about them. Being present means fully engaged in the moment with all of our senses tuned in to the people and things that are going on here and now. When we are present in each moment, we don't have time to regret the past. We don't get distracted by daydreams. Sometimes daydreaming gets in the way of being present in the moment. Daydreaming and/or daydreamers were not tolerated in the early American society. Early Americans frowned on all things that could not be defined as productive. Wasting time was considered sinful at best, demonic at worst. And daydreaming was considered to be the ultimate waste of time. And we couldn't tolerate that. Daydreaming, according to the Oxford Dictionary, is a series of pleasant thoughts that distract one's attention from the present. The Puritans considered daydreamers lazy. Sigmund Freud believed that only people who were unhappy, unfulfilled, or on the verge of mental illness daydreamed. In the 1950s, psychologists warned parents not to let their children daydream for fear that their kids would become neurotic or psychotic. In the 1960s, teachers were trained in anti-daydreaming techniques. I can remember when I was a kid in class, I was scolded for daydreaming. In fact, my teacher actually knocked on my head. You couldn't do that today, but when I was daydreaming in class when I was little, I got my head knocked on. What we now know is everybody daydreams several times a day. It's a normal, healthy part of brain activity. It is a form of escapism that all of us need from time to time. We all need a little brief escape from life in general because life is hard. When daydreaming becomes counterproductive is when it stops us from living. When we are present in our daydreams but absent in real life, that's where we've gone astray. Being present in our lives is one of the biggest gifts you can give your loved ones. Being present in our relationship with God is one of the biggest gifts you can give Him. How many times have you been praying, but after several minutes of praying, your thoughts turn to those peanut butter cups in the refrigerator? Oh, that's just me, I think. This is what it feels like when you're not present. Your mind is too distracted to fully engage in prayer, and we aren't giving God our full attention. For much of our day, our behaviors follow a pattern. One day's behaviors are pretty much the same as the day before. Personal hygiene, preparing meals, going to work, coming home, watching podcasts. We give little thought to these patterns because we're on autopilot. Being present in our moments interrupt these autopilot behaviors. Martyred missionary Jim Elliot said, "Wherever you are, be all there. Live to the hilt every situation you believe to be the will of God." Life and time do rush past, but we are to be fully alive in each day and seize it with passion. Think about what would really change if we were present in our relationship with God. Think about what would really change if we were truly present in our relationship with others. James goes on to tell us, in the time that we do have, we should do all the good we know to do. For those of us who know what good we're supposed to be doing and do not do it, we are not held innocent in the eyes of God. If we allow our thoughts to dwell on the future, we carelessly avoid doing the good we're supposed to be doing in the present. And when we do this, James says, we have sinned. It does us no good to know the good we should do if we don't do it. When it came out that assistant coach Jerry Sandusky had been allegedly molesting boys, head coach Joe Paterno knew the good he should do. He knew he should have called the police. He knew he should have put a stop to it. That would have been the good. It would have saved other boys from the alleged pedophile. He knew the good, but he did not do the good. James says he sinned. It's that simple. And the same holds true for you and me, even though we usually are not involved in such extreme situations. The good we're supposed to be doing is often very small, and sometimes they seem insignificant. Sometimes it is doing good to say a kind word to someone who's depressed. Sometimes it's doing good to lay a hand on someone's shoulder who feels dejected. Doing good must be a daily thing, not something we put off to tomorrow. Remember, James says we might not have tomorrow. One Sunday, I asked my Sunday school kids years back what they wanted written on their tombstones. One kid said, "Here lies a good man." Another kid said, "Here lies a faithful servant of God." Another said, "Here lies an honest person." And after I collected all their answers, I told them, "You'll never get any of that written on your tombstones if you do not start to live like that today. Today, we must do good." I don't know what will be etched on Vicky White's tombstone, but there are things that we know about her that could be etched on there. One of the things that stands out to me about Vicky's life is she would have given you the shirt off her back. She was unbelievably generous with her time. She made you laugh. If she had it and you need it, she'd give it to you. It was just that simple for Vicky. The first time I met Vicky was nearly 20 years ago, and she gave me something. That's the first thing she ever did. She gave me something. Diane and I had been working in the churchyard, and it was a hot day, and Vicky drove past, and was it in Les's car? Because it wasn't the Jeep, so it must have been Les's car. She drives past. It's an old car, too. It's a classic, I think. She drives past, and pretty soon she drives it back this way and into the church parking lot, and she has ice cream for both Diane and me. That's my first experience with Vicky. She gave me something, Sounds like Vicky to me. So we could say that about Vicky for sure. What will be said about you, though? I've heard that the mortality rate for human beings is 100%. What will you be remembered for? Will you be a giver like Vicky? Or will you be a taker? Will you be good and kind like Vicky was? Or will you be standoffish and maybe just a little mean? Maybe compassionate or hard-hearted? Will you be spirit-filled or will you be more worldly? In ancient Constantinople, when a monarch was crowned the emperor, the royal mason would come and present him with many sample slabs of marble. The emperor would pick the slab that he liked the best for his own tombstone. The thinking on this was that it was good for the emperor to remember his funeral on the day of his coronation, because his life was not going to last forever. His reign should be governed with the idea that each day mattered and he may not have tomorrow. How do we know what we're supposed to be doing with this short span of time that God has given to us? We are to live within the will of God. We are to obey God. We are to seek God's mind and heart when we set about planning our schedules. And we are to do all of the good that we know to do in every day. What if we lived each day as if it were our last, not in a morbid sense, but with the idea that we are to be fully present each day, doing all the good that we are supposed to do in that day? I have to think that our lives would be very different than they are right now. James Wesley said, "Do all the good you can, by all the means you can, in all the ways you can, in all the places you can, at all the times you can, to all the people you can, as long as ever you can." And just in case you're looking for a loophole, we're to do good to all the people we can, not just our friends or to people that we think are worthy or to our families. Doing good is to be our way of life. It is a way of living that permeates everything we do and everything we are. Now, I hope each one of you live to be 100 years old with a sound mind and body. And I hope that each one of you live every single one of those days as if it were your last, doing all the good that you know you should do.